Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He joins us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And we are happy to have him on this day where the NFL is making news. Then again, we can say that almost every day. It is Mike Florio. He is the head and creator of Pro Football Talk. He is at Pro Football Talk on X. He is also always skipping his lunch or pushing it back later for us on a Wednesday. So we got to ask you, Mike, before we get into all the news, what's on the docket for lunch today?
This week has been so busy. It's one of those, whenever I have a window to eat, I grab whatever I can find. I have no idea what's lurking in the kitchen. I might have to get creative. I might have to actually leave the house to the dismay of my neighbors and other, you know, community members.
No, Mike, it's that kind of week. You got to go treat yourself and just get the DoorDash, Uber Eats, whatever. Order pizza if you want. Just order something, stay in your house, get comfortable, man.
No. I don't like people coming to my house.
Oh.
I don't like anyone knowing where I live. We live in a spot where it's just right on the edge of, you know, civilization, and it's hard to find, and I like it that way. So we don't do food delivery because I don't want people knowing where I live.
You're one of those rare off-the-grid but on-the-grid people.
Yeah.
I'm basically a hermit.
I'm always amazed by those. The people who like to be
I once read an article about the terms of someone's house arrest and what they were allowed to do and not allowed to do, and it dawned on me, I'm basically on self-imposed house arrest.
Or you've been quarantining before it was actually quarantining? I see.
Yeah. Well, it's continued like for 5 years. Like that created a snap in my existence. And it's got, you know what? I kind of like staying home and not dealing with people. And I think the people kind of like me staying home and not dealing with them.
There's a general segment of the population that has lived that life since the pandemic. So I get you, Mike. I get you. Looking at what we expected to happen today, and all the talk was that the tush push was going to be banned. But yet here we are. And my understanding is, the vote failed.
It's been a bad week for the commissioner. He had three things he wanted to push through. One, player participation in the Olympic flag football tournament in 2028. Check. Two, this Lions proposal to reseed the playoff tree, which had been instigated by the league and which the commissioner wanted. We reported that back after the meetings that happened in Palm Beach late March, early April. That lost. And now the ban of the tush push, which it felt like there was a groundswell to get this thing out of the game, to basically rewind the rule book to 2005 when no pulling or pushing of the runner was allowed anywhere on the field. That rule change as of 2006 planted the seed. It was almost like the 17-year locust. It took 16 years for the Eagles to figure out, hey, we can use this as a sword. We can weaponize this in our playbook. It felt like it was going to be gone, but at the end of the day, by only two votes, which means they're probably going to try it again next year. Somebody high up in the league doesn't like this play, and it probably is the guy whose signature is on every football. I'm surprised they did it. I was kind of hoping they would get rid of it because I was hoping the Eagles would line up in a quarterback sneak every single play and gain 5 yards every single play, because it wasn't going to change the effectiveness of the quarterback sneak. Sanity prevailed. If you want to beat them, you better come up with a way to stop it or come up with a way to run it yourself.
Well, I understand. If I'm George McCaskey and I know my team can't run it, then yeah, of course I'm voting against it because it's a competitive advantage I gain by banning it. So that I get. As a football fan, I absolutely think it's a football play and it should be in the game because it was something creative. It was a correct use of your talent to get a desired result. That's the part of this that I crack up at, is there are teams who can run it and there are teams who can't. And for those who can't, I think it's hilarious that they're allowed to even vote on it like this. It's basically like throwing a pity party publicly.
Yeah, it was such an apparent attack on a play that, and it's twofold. We've seen other trends in the NFL, and it's a copycat league. So if somebody does something well, the other teams have two challenges. One, how can we do that thing that everyone else is doing well? And two, how can we stop that thing? I remember with the Wildcat and the read option 12, 13 years ago, there was a concerted effort by defensive coordinators to figure out how to stop this thing that had become unstoppable, and they did. So instead of trying to figure it out in the traditional way, it just felt like a petty attack on the Eagle signature play. And what bothered me was they were coming up with bogus reasons. It almost felt like our current political environment where people just say whatever they have to say, truth be damned. Oh, it's a safety issue. Okay, where's your safety data? Well, let me see. I don't have any. But, you know, it could be a safety issue. It could be a safety issue, so that's good enough. Oh, and by the way, it's not a football play. Well, what do you mean it's not a football play? Well, it doesn't look like a football play. Well, what's not football about it? It's a football. It's 11 players on each side. They're lined up legally, and they run the play. So I didn't like that aspect of a moving goalpost that was trying to hide the real agenda. We don't like this play. And I think the catalyst was the exchange that happened during the NFC Championship when the Commanders repeatedly jumped offside to the point where referee Sean Hockley had to say to the Commanders, if you do it again, we're going to award a touchdown. I think that made someone decide, we got to get rid of this thing. That's an embarrassing sequence. Even though it wasn't the Eagles' fault, we just got to get rid of this thing so we don't have that kind of weird moment in a game where 50 million people are watching.
Well, I also want to ask about this. This segment, by the way, with Mike Florio, brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I think when it comes to the playoff seeding aspect, especially from what we saw in the NFC North, for example, and what we see out of other divisions, I'm looking at the South, it makes sense to reseed. I assume in the same way it would mean that a division winner doesn't get a home game and they're mad about that. But as a fan, I think that that is something you want to see happen because it's not fair that you're rewarding teams that aren't nearly as good as others.
The potential unfairness has been there for years. I first made a big deal out of it after the Saints had to go play a wild card game in Seattle when Seattle was 7-9 and the Saints were 11-5. And the Seahawks won. That was the Beastquake game. And the argument was, well, the Seahawks are the better team. No, you play that game in New Orleans, and the Saints are going to win. That's the value of home field advantage. But this wasn't an equity thing. This was the league office instigating the Lions to make this proposal because the commissioner believes that if you seed 1-7, regardless of division championship, you will make the late season games more exciting as teams jockey for their spots. I don't know that that logically flows, but that's what it's about. Making the Week 18 games better so we have better games we can move to this window and that window and standalone here. And, you know, this past year, the Week 18 slate from 1 o'clock through 7:25 Eastern on the final Sunday, it wasn't very compelling. So I can understand the idea, but it doesn't make any sense logically. And here's the problem. If you're going to make your playoff seeding depend only on record in comparison to other teams from your conference, you need to take a step back and look at the scheduling formula. We need to have more games in the conference. Maybe we need to have fewer inter-conference games and more games against the other teams that we're ultimately competing with for the playoff positioning. Maybe we need to get rid of the two games against every division rival. Maybe we should play 15 games against the other conference teams and just two interconference games. I think if they're going to do this again next year, and I have a feeling they'll regroup and try it again, it needs to be coupled with a way to look at the scheduling formula to ensure that those final standings better reflect competition in the conference. Remember when the college football conferences were small enough that you could just played every other team in the conference?
Yeah, you might miss one or two teams.
That's the easiest way to determine the champion. Whoever's got the best record after each team has played every other team, boom, that's fair. I don't know that they'll get there, but they need to do something other than what they're doing.
Mike, you basically want to do the opposite of what the NHL and Major League Baseball has done in recent years and limit the exposure of home fans to teams from around the league every 3 years. That's what you're saying, right? I mean, because I don't hate the idea because the NFL is such a different product than Major League Baseball and the NHL in terms of how many games there are and how often you see teams. But Major League Baseball had the big problem where you weren't going to get a chance to see a star from a certain city, say Shohei Ohtani, because of the way the schedule was set up if you were an American League team. And I like how they've solved that problem. But I think you're right because the NFL is so different in that the way we see stars and teams and individual players is not the same. They don't need the star power that these other leagues need to be showcased around the country and beyond the border, honestly, if you're talking about Canada as well.
In 2002, when the Texans joined the NFL and the league reconfigured into 8 four-team divisions, they came up with the scheduling formula that made variety a key. And every 8 years, if you're a Bears season ticket holder, every 8 years, you will have seen every other team in the NFL come to Soldier Field. Okay, that was the approach. But there's a problem with it. And the problem's there even without the reseeding. I think the reseeding brings the problem into focus. Look at the NFC North last year. The NFC North played 8 of its 17 games against the 4 teams of the AFC South and the 4 teams of the NFC West, which was down last year. So what a shock. You produce 3 playoff teams out of the NFC North. This year, whoa, hang on. 4 teams of the AFC North, 4 teams of the NFC East. All of a sudden, 8 of the 17 games become much more difficult. And it's based on this two-pronged rotation where you just click every year. We go from the AFC North to the AFC South to the AFC West, and then you click the NFC through the other 3 divisions. 8 of your 17 games are tied to that rotation, which is premised on long-term variety. And if we're going to say we're going to rank teams 1 through 7 based upon their record, they've got to take a look at this whole idea of, well, we want to have variety. No, at some point we need to have fairness. Otherwise, we don't get a true snapshot when you look at how those teams are ranked. Look, I think the Rams have a great chance this year to be the number 1 seed because the other 3 teams in their division aren't great right now. And they're going to play the 4 teams of the NFC South and the 4 teams of the AFC South. They can fatten up their record with 8 games against teams from 2 of the worst divisions in football right now.
Well, I also think that if that were to happen, there's an easy argument to be made for what the owners want the most, and that's that 18th game. You know, that's the other piece of this, is that there's a way to say that extra game will guarantee a more accurate seating process. It will get you from point A to B. It will solve a lot of the concerns about inventory for star power, for example. It gives you that extra national game. As an advocate for players, I'm against it. But if you're trying to use that argument in this discussion, I don't know why they wouldn't vote for it in concert with that concept then.
Well, the 18th game is coming. The question is, do the players agree to it before the current CBA expires and get some significant concession, or do they wait until early 2031, get locked out like they did in 2011, and eventually, when it's time to start missing game checks, agree to 18 games? 18 is coming. I think 20, at some point down the road, under the same logic they're using, to go from 16-4 to 17-3, now to 18-2. The preseason games stink. We've had 20 total games forever. It was 14-6 back when I first discovered the NFL. It's still 20 games. Let's just have no preseason and play 20. But, you know, as we come up with different ways to prioritize the teams when the season is over, that all becomes relevant. And that all assumes the league office cares. I'm not sure that the commissioner cares about this idea of the schedule should have more conference games. You win your games. You win your games or you lose your games. Your schedule is what it is. And 1 year you get lucky and 1 year you don't. And that's just the way it works year in and year out. So regardless, I think this effort that was started by the Lions isn't going to go away. The push against the tush push isn't going to go away. And it's going to give us stuff to cover and follow and talk about next year for the March meetings and then possibly the May meetings.
Mike, you talked about 18 and then 20. If you go back to 18, we got to go back to a 2-bye system. And if you go to 20, you definitely have to have 2 byes.
You have to have 3 potentially at that point. Just kick it out to mid February in the middle of sweeps
or make
the Super Bowl.
That holiday weekend be Super Bowl Sunday and then everybody gets the Monday off.
Bingo.
Here's the problem. they want to land the Super Bowl badly on President's Day weekend. Right. And under the current formula, like once every 7, 8, 9 years, it's going to anyway. If you add in a second bye, because one of the arguments for 18 games is, hey, it's perfect. We're going to get President's Day weekend Super Bowl. Well, it's not going to happen every year. It's going to overshoot from time to time. But if you add a second bye, then you have to ask the real question of, do we go back to the days prior to 2001 when the season started on Labor Day weekend? And they got away from that because people aren't home on Labor Day weekend. The ratings were lower on Labor Day weekend. And at some point, I think they're going to revisit that and start on Labor Day weekend, because now it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
if you're at the barbecue or the beach. You watch the game right there.
Christmas Day told us that, right?
There. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about Christmas Day and Thanksgiving and whatever else they want to take over. Another thing that was discussed, and it got a lot of discussion between our show and Mully and Haw, the other show you appear on, in transition before we started, was what is important to the owners when it comes to the participation in the Olympics in flag football. And you hear guys like Justin Jefferson talk about how much it would mean for him to represent his country. David Haw made the excellent point that there is an injury risk here when you consider it. But then that got me thinking, what matters more to the owners? Is it the injury risk to a player, or is it the potential to, again, grow the game, especially that international piece with having the Olympic exposure?
Well, when I was at the league meetings in March, and they do a Monday night cocktail party, if you're smart and you sidle up to the right people who have had the right amount of the products being disseminated by the open bar, you can pick up some things. And it was clear to me that there was tension between the league office and the owners about this NFL active player participation in the Olympics. Because if I'm an owner of a team, first of all, the fan base of that team should be very glad I'm not. But if I'm an owner of a team, I don't want any of my players out there taking unnecessary risks. You look at the standard player contracts, it's got a laundry list of things you can't do because they want to reserve the right to inflict injury on you within the confines of their practices and games, not when you're not working. So I thought there would be more pushback against this. And I think there probably was, but at the end of the day, 32-0 vote, unanimous vote. I think they got everybody on board, because when you limit it to one player per team, it's easier to sell the owners on the idea that Olympics equals greater international exposure, equals greater international interest in football, equals greater money for you, and it's easy to put that together. And really, if you're looking at a maximum of one per team, 10 players on the U.S. men's flag football team, how many guys are you really going to put at risk in any given Olympics for however long this lasts? And it only lasts 1 week of the Olympics, not the full 2 weeks, because there's only six teams. So if it's 2028, 2032, 2036, I think they're going along with it for now in the interest of this broader 100-year plan for global domination. And I know it'll never happen, but if you'd asked me back in the mid-70s, will football ever overtake baseball in the United States, I'd have scoffed. So I think they're hoping to truly globalize the sport. And if they can make it as popular elsewhere as it is here, billion-dollar business becomes trillion-dollar business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can tell that that is the growth mindset that they have. I know that you probably heard about the Seth Wickersham story, Mike, that came out about Carl Williams and all the things he said before leading up to the point where the Bears drafted Caleb Williams. In there were valid pieces of information from Seth via Carl about Caleb wanting to play for Kevin O'Connell. That reminded me of the comments where you talked about the possibility of the Bears trading for a coach. And that at the time, an unnamed coach said to you, why not me? Why did I immediately think that this is Kevin O'Connell, thanks to this piece of information coming out?
Look at Mike.
I have no comment.
Look, and Kevin O'Connell was the end of a contract, right?
Again, over the years, that it is frowned upon in media circles to engage in speculation as to who someone's source might be.
I'm sorry, I was not aware
of
that.
It's okay. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I have been chastised, I'm tongue in cheek. I've been chastised fist in mouth by reporters for guessing who their sources are to try to help the audience better understand what's going on. And I think I've managed to filibuster my way past that question. But that story from Seth Wickersham, I loved it because I thought I'd lost my mind last year, because I was hearing all that same stuff. He doesn't want to go to the Bears. They're trying to come up with creative ways to circumvent the draft. And then all of a sudden, everything's fine. It's like, what happened? And I think at the end of the day, and I think this is an indication of how hard it is in today's climate to push back against the draft process, which the fans regard as some sort of mystical Harry Potter sorting hat exercise. Wow. It's such a big deal now that at the end of the day, Caleb Williams didn't want his dad to become the guy who takes the flack for pushing back against the Bears. And if anybody's ever going to do it, again, it's going to be Arch Manning, because he's got Peyton, he's got Eli, he's got his grandpa who took the lead 21 years ago with Eli when he was going to be drafted by the Chargers. I think it's very hard. I think that's the big takeaway from that story. It is so hard in this day and age to be guy who pushes back against the sorting hat process. And look, it's worked out. It's worked out. They have Ben Johnson. Everything should be fine moving forward. But yeah, I'm a big proponent, especially quarterbacks. Top of the draft, I don't like the idea that you have no say in where you're going to go. Look at all the quarterbacks the Jets have ruined. I don't want to go to the Jets. I don't want to go to a dysfunctional team. I don't want to go to a team with a defensive head coach and an offensive coordinator I may not believe in. I don't want to do that. I want to go to a team with a head coach who's an offensive coordinator and a quarterback whisperer is going to get the most out of my talents. That's fair. Anyone should want that for their son, their nephew, their cousin, their client, their whoever. That's what we should want. But I think the ship has long sailed on the ability to effectively push back with a public attack on the team that holds your draft rights.
Well, yeah. And the reality is this was not investigative journalism. This was an embedded author working on a book. Yeah, that process and the willingness to understand the information will be disseminated, I think, is part of this as well.
Well, that's right. I was stunned that Carl Williams was so candid about it. And, you know, that's the difference between somebody who's reporting for right now and somebody who's reporting for some vague, undetermined date down the road. It's a lot easier to be candid when you're not going to see your words tomorrow. But there is going to be a reckoning at some point. And I think it's unfortunate for Caleb that now he's in the middle of this storm, because, you know, we've all moved on. It doesn't matter. He's made the commitment. He signed the 4-year contract. He didn't push back. He didn't try to avoid the Bears. He's the Bears' starting quarterback, and he'll be there for, if they want him, if they want to keep him there, at least 7, possibly 8 years before he could leave as a free agent. So I think we need to understand the context. He did show up. He did sign the contract. He's there. He wants to be there. And now he has a coach who can maybe get the most out of his skills.
Agreed. And Deion Sanders being the latest of the pushback thing not working. So I agree with you completely, Mike.
Well, I thought he was going to do it. And I think maybe he realized as well. First of all, you got to have a player who is high enough in the pecking order that it actually is a card you can play. But Arch Manning is the one I'm watching. If Arch Manning, and now look, the right team may tank whatever year he's coming out and it's not an issue, but if the team with the rights to get him, assuming he's a top prospect, if he doesn't want to go there and he doesn't push back, no one's ever going to push back again.
It's true. Yeah. The biggest name is the one who has to elicit change many times. Mike, I'm sorry I listened too much. I was thinking in my mind, I had to go straight to the source. I apologize.
It was a good moment. I never complain about a good moment. It was fun.
Hey, man.
I do not divulge my sources, but I have no problem with the question that you asked.
I figured as much. At least you know we're consuming the content. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, we appreciate it. Good luck out there in the public when you get your groceries or food or whatever
you.
Else.
Thank you, Mike.
Have a great day. See ya.
That was Mike Florio. We are getting you ready for Cubs baseball. The Cubs and Marlins wrap up their series today in Miami. Pre-game coverage begins in a few minutes at 11:35. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer have first pitch pitch at 12:10 on The Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
And don't forget, you can join Mark Grody from 1 to 3 p.m. tomorrow at the Verizon store at 630 Grand Avenue in Gurnee. Three pairs of tickets will be given away to Cubs on Deck on May 28th at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville with special guest Ian Happ will be there. Cubs on Deck, powered by Verizon. Learn more about Verizon's deals for Military Appreciation Month at your local Verizon store.
And again, thanks to all of our servicemen and women who participate. Thank you for your service. Our service people are important. So anytime we can get that in, I feel like it's important to say.
Yeah. Now we're on to the Cubs, and the Cubs a chance to go 7-2 in this 9-game stretch.
I love the Marshall benchmarks. I think we need some sort of a measurement system.
Well, I'm just 7-2 is my measurement, like,
right, but like the Marshall scale of record, you know, like I've got to figure out how we say it.
Let me know.
There's got to be something there.
Let me know. We can discuss this in a brainstorming session.
I think that is fair. Just a friendly reminder about your Cubs lineup today as we get you ready for that third game of this series. Cade Horton is starting. He's looking for his third win of the season. Ian Happ is set to bat leadoff. Then it is Kyle Tucker as DH. Seiya Suzuki is in right field. Pete Crow Armstrong is batting cleanup. Marshall is happy about this. It is interesting to see what's going to happen.
I worry
he's going to want to hit for a grand slam every time.
Seiya Suzuki, two outs, runners in scoring position, .423 batting average, .531 on base, and a .962 slug.
There it is. Michael Busch is batting fifth. He is playing at first base. Dansby Swanson, your shortstop. Nico Horner, Miguel Amaya catching, and Matt Shaw batting ninth. He is at third. Thanks to Ray Diaz, Robbie Triana, Jenna Duddleston, Connor O'Donnell, Matt Anaya, and Brandon Fryer, thanks to you for joining us for this one.